Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where today we're going to be talking about AEX Gold and, of course, their big gold project and another mineral project, as the name change would suggest, as it changes to Amaroq Minerals over in Greenland. And joining us today is Warwick Morley-Jepson, the non-executive director at AEX Gold. So, hello, Warwick. Thank you very much for joining us on today's podcast. How are you?
I'm really well. Thanks, Mark, and thanks for having me on your podcast.
No, it's good to be talking to you. We have spoken to Elder, the CEO, a few times. And I'm certainly very interested in what the company is doing, particularly in Greenland as well, and how that's developing as Europe's answer to Australia, perhaps for sourcing minerals and precious metals. So, yes, it's good to be catching up. Kenny, of course, joining us as well. How are you?
Yep, I'm all good, Mark. Thanks for the introduction. It's great to have you on, Warwick. And I believe is it South Africa you're calling from today?
Yeah, hi there, Kenny. Yes, I'm in South Africa. This is where I live now. I've traveled, I guess, in the last 20 years or so. And so I've chosen to come back to my roots, and this is where I am together with my family.
Excellent. Well, I'm hoping South Africa's a lot warmer than Scotland today. It feels as if we're back in the winter, and it's absolute freezing, raining and blowing a gale. But that's pretty normal for us, so we just got on with it. But
did you manage to make it to the Indaba, out of interest, Warwick?
No, not this year. I have been times, as you'd understand, but not this year.
Okay. No, I just wondered. Okay. Yeah. Well, Kenny, you were going to introduce.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, obviously we have a lot of people on these podcasts, Warwick, and what we like to do here is, you know, we believe that you can have the best projects in the world. You know, you can have a 5 million ounce gold deposit, but if you don't have the right people to manage these projects, then it doesn't work. So we like to find out about the people behind the business. So really, this is an opportunity for yourself, maybe in the sort of next 15 minutes, just to give us almost like a potted history of yourself. And it's up to you how far you go back. You can go back to where you were born, you know, early education, you know, what got you into the world of mineral resources, etc., and just give us a wee journey through your business, you know, because I've seen you've worked for some tier one majors, you know, Kinross, etc. So it'd be really interesting just to hear your story. And like I say, it's up to you how far you want to go back.
Right, thanks very much, Kenny. Let me just say that I studied mechanical engineering and graduated in a number of years back now. It was 1979, in fact. And then was appointed as a certificated engineer in the maintenance group in a very large gold mining industry mining company called Randfontein Estates in 1984. And I went straight down into the mining operations from that time, deep level underground, running a section which was predominantly mechanized. In fact, it was one of the first mechanized plays within the South African gold mining industry back then. And about 14 years later, I left the same mining company, which was mining well over 500,000 tons of material a month using mechanized operations through four shafts and into three metallurgical plants. And so significant operation, and that really gave me the grounding of both mining and engineering, mechanical, electrical, civil instrumentation that I've used in my career thereafter. I was taken off out of that environment and put into capital projects. And for a period of 1994 to 2005, I actually was at the start the project manager for the South Deep project, which is currently owned by Gold Fields. And we turned the first sod in 1994 and excavated and built that entire project, which is made up of two vertical shafts down to well over 2.9 kilometers deep. And that was commissioned probably 10 years later, at a time where I was a member of the joint venture board. And that was between Placer Dome in those days and Western Areas Limited. Barrick then took over Placer Dome. I then became part of the Barrick Group and headed up projects and business development for Barrick for a period before I chose to leave and joined some smaller companies that were developing activities within Asia and Russia. It was Barrick that actually gave me my first entry into Russia. I took on a role of head of the Russian projects within Barrick for a period before I left. And so with that experience in Russia, I was then approached to take on a position with a small junior that had interest in both Russia, as I said, and Asia. I was there for a little over 2 years at a time where, in 2008, when we had the crash.
Yeah.
And it was extremely difficult during that time to raise money for the work that we were doing at the small company. And so, unfortunately, I left there without being able to actually build anything. It was really a cash restriction, which really gave rise to that ending. I then joined Kinross, and initially as the regional vice president for Kinross, running the Russian operations and Russian region, rather. And that was back in 2009. And it was really some of my best time in my working career was spent there. I was regional vice president there for 5 years. And during that time, we generated a huge amount of revenue for Kinross, and as well as developed and commissioned a second mine in the region. And then in 2014, I was promoted to the chief operating officer for Kinross, at which time we were running 10 mining operations around the world within four regions, those regions being North America, South America, Africa, and Russia. And so I maintained that position until 2017. The end of 2016, which again gave me a very good exposure to the executive roles in a large gold mining company. I then left in 2017, and then not too long thereafter, I was approached to take on a role as the chief operating officer for Ivanhoe Mines. And so I joined Ivanhoe Mines as their vice president, executive vice president for Ivanhoe Mines for a period of which we were building the Kamoa-Kakula operation as a joint venture, and as well as the Kipushi, which is a high-grade base metal mine up also in the DRC, and then furthering the development of the Platreef operations here in South Africa. And so I left there in 2019. During that period from when I left Kinross, and also during the period in which I was working for Ivanhoe, I actually was the chairman of West Dome Gold Mines, which is a developing junior at that time, had a market cap of, I guess, just above 400, 500 million. And then just last year, earlier this year, we achieved a market cap of 2 billion Canadian dollars. So that's one of my positions that I hold at the board level. I then also joined Karora Resources, also a TSX listed company, with most of its operations, well, in fact, now all of its operations based in Western Australia. Also a junior that's quickly developing to become a mid-tier player, producing just over 100,000 ounces of gold a year at the moment, with a growth plan to take us to 200,000 ounces of gold a year. It was just last year that I was approached by AEX to join their board. And if I look at all three boards that I'm involved with now, I was quite selective in joining them. From my side, at least, I really wanted to understand that they had great potential. They had an opportunity to grow in the operations. I certainly have got the background from both operations as well as project development to play a role on the board, and also, you know, the second criteria for me was really the people that are on the board, the progressive outlook, the consideration for growing the company, the enthusiasm and the competence, and certainly all those boxes were ticked in all the boards that I'm on. So I guess semi-retired at this stage, with my focus really on serving the boards of these TSX listed companies.
It's a very long career, isn't it? Is it almost 40 years, I think, of a career there in mining exploration with different types of geology, different projects, different commodities, and of course different jurisdictions. It's maybe a hard question to answer. Like, what have you learned, or the key takeaways? Because I assume that every single project is very different, and there's lots of different things to learn from them. But I mean, could you take some of your what kind of, maybe a better question is, what can you take from your experiences around the world, and how can they best be applied to AEX and in Greenland, and with the deposit that they've got and the geology there and the jurisdiction as well?
Okay, thanks, Mark. I think, you know, your question really brings to mind two things for me. The one is the technical issues associated with bringing on a mine into production, and really it does start off with the geology. It does start off with being extremely patient, I would say, because it generally doesn't happen that quickly, given that a lot of work has to be done, a lot of money has to be put into the ground, and just to understand the geology, the deposit, and the means in which it's going to be mined. Obviously, when you start a mine, it's a very, very costly process, and that just gives more reason to be extremely sure of the reserve that you are going to mine, the geology, the challenges that geology and mine condition and ground conditions would pose through that entire process. So the technical issues, whether it be in any one of the jurisdictions that I've worked, would be pretty typical and generally the same. You know, one would go through a series of studies, which as more and more information is derived through the drill bit, one can build up a study that then carries a very high level of confidence that when one calls for monies to execute, those monies are sufficient in quantum to be able to fulfill the challenges that were understood at the time of approving a project. From a point of view of other things that I've learned within the mining industry, having worked in so many jurisdictions, it really goes to the softer issues. To understand the cultures in which we operate, you understand that whether you're working and mining in Mauritania, whether it's in Far East Russia, that each one of these jurisdictions have got people that are there as the owners of the land, owners of the cultures in which they live in. And we are, in fact, in many ways, the visitors. And we need to respect that. We need to be able to ensure that entry into their areas to mine and operate ultimately fulfills a win-win situation, a win for those that are investing the money, a win for ourselves for executing the work needing to extract the minerals and the value that is in the ground, and then also to bring value to the communities by way of involving them in many activities, allowing them to develop, gain employment through the mining operations. And if not only employment, but also the procurement activities or opportunities that would become real as a result of a large mine development. So that's really more to the difference that I've experienced across all the mining industries, all the mining jurisdictions that I've been involved with. The technical side is pretty consistent, whether you're mining rock in one area of the world or open pits in another. Those experiences are pretty similar. I'm not suggesting that they're easy. It's always been challenging, but that's why mining is so exciting.
Indeed, yeah. We often hear about the communities and engagement with you know, First Nations and local communities, and I think a lot of people dismiss it. Is it a really critical factor to get right?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. I mean, one hears in the news almost on a week-by-week basis how communities have been treated badly, and rightly so in many ways. They have voiced their concerns as to how they've been treated by those that have come into their countries to mine. And you know, initially, promises are made to communities, and sometimes those promises aren't borne out, and so communities get very upset. And certainly one needs a license to operate, and that license generally comes from the authorities of those countries together with the communities in which occupy the land in which you're operating on.
So it's almost like a virtuous circle you need to create to get that mine operational, you know, keep everybody happy. And and if you've, you know, if you've got to employ so many of the locals, that's the way it should be. Everybody gets a piece of the pie. I wonder if I could just, I mean, probably in the last 20 years, Warwick, I mean, there's not been many large-scale gold discoveries, and all these majors are having to dig deeper and deeper, as we talked about earlier on. Do you think Greenland is potentially a sort of new frontier for major gold discoveries?
I don't think it's limited to gold alone. I think there's a fair bit of work that's been done, keeping in mind that it's still in its infancy, but a fair bit of work that has been done on the geological side to understand that the areas towards the south and southwest of the continent are sufficiently endowed with minerals, precious and base, and what we now start to call the battery metals, to cause people to become very interested in the area.
Yeah,
it's in over and above what the property or the land can provide in terms of opportunities. One would also understand that it's a what we would call a tier one jurisdiction. You know, people generally are very cautious, albeit other tier two jurisdictions would certainly attract others. But one would consider the likes of Canada, Australia, North America, with the US and Canada together, and Greenland fall into a similar basket as a place in which is well respected. They have generally very well constructed legal systems, a authority that is very welcoming in attracting mining activities. And so I think a lot stands for Greenland being a a good mining jurisdiction.
Yeah, and of course, in the last couple of days, EEX Gold announced that they had increased their footprint in the area. And I think, you know, they are one of the biggest landholders in southern Greenland. And I think I picked up a point from the RNS that there's a gold belt. I'm not even going to pronounce it. It's Nanotalio. But pretty much AEX Gold has that whole footprint.
Yeah, the Nanotalio gold belt is what would be considered to be a bit of a geological feature that runs from the northeast to the southwest. AEX Gold is very happy to have concluded a further agreement with a holder of exploration properties that fall within that Nanotalio gold belt. And so with this agreement that has just been concluded, we have nearly doubled our position as far as landholding is concerned. And so the potential to develop that is certainly very much there. We have already have some deposits that we've done some exploration work on already. The Varga Ridge is a perfect example of that, where the work that we have done certainly has shown that there's the potential for the deposit being very close to surface as well as extremely high grades. So, you know, still early days. We need to do a fair bit more work. We have to ultimately get the drill bit going in these areas. And it really could be the making of something very exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Mark, sorry, I've been talking too much.
That's all right. No. We can talk about Nalanak, can't we? The VGAR project as well. And of course, a huge area. I think was it in an RNS recently? It could be a world class deposit? No, tier one, that's the word, isn't it? Tier one with the grades that are coming out. Constantly finding high grades there with the further five targets identified. So what are your feelings on this project?
I mean, it certainly has the makings of growing. The good news is that every time we drill, we get information that furthers both our understanding of the geological structure, which then in turn helps us to develop and understand our geological model. Which then in turn helps us to site the next drill hole positions. So if it's not helping us in that fashion, it's certainly also giving us the understanding of the presence of mineralization. And, we have this at Nalanak, have this vein, which is what we are generally pursuing, which carries very high grades. And we've published some of the information that we've received to date. There's still further that is outstanding, still going through the process of assaying and confirmation from our laboratories. But it's exciting stuff. You know, it's when you start putting money into the ground and you're coming up with very little, that one gets quite despondent. We are exactly the opposite. The work that James and his teams are doing is very good. And, you know, going through the geological process of first assessing at a surface through many of the high-tech systems and processes that the geologists have to ultimately the positioning of drill holes into the ground.
Yeah, there's a good point you mentioned there about money. Obviously, and the market conditions are tough at the moment as well, Warwick. But fortunately, AEX Gold are in a decent position. Cash is king, and the last set of results, I can't remember the exact figure. I'm going to say it was something like $20 million of cash in the bank. So it's an amazing situation for an explorer to be in, to have such funds available to get that drill bit turning, as you said earlier on?
Yeah, I mean, exploration is a high-risk process. You know, not everyone is successful. But the level of success that we are seeing with our drill bit has been very, very reassuring. And, you know, we've got a number of investors that are with us, they are obviously very keen to understand how the work that we are doing is materializing to the point that we can start considering putting a process on to start producing gold. We ourselves are very excited to start that process, but you know, we need to make sure that we have sufficient knowledge of the resource that we could then convert that resource into a mineable reserve, confirm that it can justify the capital that we would want to employ in the development of the surface infrastructure necessary to operate a mine, and thereafter, you know, generate revenue as a company's intended outcome. So it is a process that, you know, in many areas has taken many years. And part of that delay, I guess, in mine development has also comes about as a result of the jumps and hurdles that one has to pursue in getting the authorities to approve a mine plan, a environmental studies, and such like. Fortunately, in the case of Greenland, the government and the authorities work very, very closely with mining companies like AEX. And so, you know, the kind of delays you would see in other jurisdictions are certainly nowhere near as tedious. We really see a lot of assistance and working together from the authorities in pursuance of developing mines and ultimately bringing value to both the companies that operate there as well as the country itself.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's definitely evident from the news flow that's been coming out of the company. They certainly seem to have excellent relationships with the authorities. And I mean, these results are clearly being reflected in the share price, but, you know, every other mining or junior explorers at 52-year lows. And here we have AEX Gold that's kind of pushing 52-week highs. Mm. So it's quite interesting that, you know, there's not many of these explorers out there that are sitting at 52-week highs. You know, 99.9% of them are sitting at 52-week lows. So when this market eventually turns, and perhaps that's a question for you in a minute, Warwick, you know, AEX Gold are perfectly positioned to get the market cap up to a level which probably represents the projects and the potential that they have. So I wonder if you could just maybe, what do you think of the markets just now? Just a general comment. I mean, it's pretty much carnage everywhere, but you guys seem to be just sitting quietly, getting on with your job.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's the confidence that the AEX team can provide those that choose to wish, those who choose to invest in our sector. You know, the market this last week has just been unbelievable, where we have a situation on Wednesday where the market caps of numerous mining companies fell nearly anything from 2-3% up to 15-16% in one day. And at the same time, the gold price fell from the 1880s to $1,840 per ounce. The very next day, Thursday, most of those companies who saw their market caps fall by that extent went up a further 3-4%, basically correcting for what they had lost the day before. But strangely enough, the gold price continued to fall in the same time. down to close on 1810, 1820. So, you know, it's so volatile. Everyone has their theory as to why it's happening. And I guess only half of those people are right. But it's very, very challenging. So, you know, I tend to go back to basics and suggest that, you know, we need to deliver an understanding of what we're trying to do, give the market an understanding of the competence of those people that are doing it, and keep everyone well informed of the results.
And what I like about your talk about results here and R&Ss, what I like about AEX Gold is they always produce a presentation with each news release, because for somebody that's not got a geological background, sometimes these news releases can be pretty heavy, and a lot of the messaging is lost because they're so long and complicated. So it's always nice to get some visuals to go alongside the news, which just it makes it easier for investors to understand what's going on.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. I mean, we're catering for investors. The bigger investors will certainly have equipped themselves with mining engineers and geologists to be able to understand it. But a lot of those that don't have those skill sets around them certainly need to understand what they're investing in.
No, excellent, Mark. Mark, you got anything to finish off with?
Well, just thinking on over your career, Warwick, and just thinking of investment in mining exploration projects over the last 20 years, would you say there's been a chronic underinvestment in precious metals, but also base metals and strategic metals going forward? I hear time and time again that there is going to be a big shortage, and the market doesn't really appreciate at the moment how short the industry is on certain metals. What's your opinion, having been in this game for approximately 40 years? Do you feel that there has been a chronic underinvestment, and we're really going to see a bit of a supply squeeze?
Yeah, I can really talk for the gold industry.
Yeah,
that's where I've been prominently all my life, and I would agree with you 100%. Now, those that have said it, and have said it for the last 10, 15 years, that the money that people are putting into exploration or gold and other precious metals has been insufficient to maintain a production profile as has been seen over the years in the past. Also keeping in mind that, you know, generally if you look at it from a global perspective, we've mined most of the easy accessible gold, that which is pretty close to surface, that is, which is pretty high in grade. And we're now needing to go well below surface to find the next resources. Mm-hmm. And to do that can only be done with a drill bit. And drilling these days is not a cheap process at all. And, you know, so one needs to put a lot of money into that process in our industry. And it is risk money. And you know, mining companies, generally, when they're cutting costs to ensure their longevity, whilst they might ensure their longevity from a cost and production point of view, they need to replenish their reserves on a continuous basis. And if they don't do that, then they certainly it's a dying industry. Our job is to ensure that we drill wisely, we spend exploration monies diligently to ensure that the success factor is significantly higher than what might be the norm. And what I'm glad to say, in all three companies that I'm with, each one of them has really been very successful in exploration endeavors.
Good. Well, thank you very much for your time, Warwick. It's been good talking to you.
No, it was great to have you on, and definitely an interesting character, and perhaps we can get you back on at some point as well, maybe in the future. Even just for a generic talk about the gold industry, doesn't need to be about AEX Gold. Obviously, you've got a wealth of experience.
No, by all means, anytime.
Perfect. Mark, you got anything to add before we go?
No, I'm all good. Yeah, just to say thank you again, Warwick, for your time today. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You too. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.